Hey, who's over there? What? It's Marty. And he looks sad.
Oh, where did he go? Has anybody seen my dog? Has anybody seen my dog?
Al, are you there?
He's gone and left.
Al.
Yes, Jeff.
Al.
Captain
Al.
Tom,
Al.
Can you
Al.
Hear
everyone,
me?
Welcome to This Week in Mormons. It's time where we will discuss Mormon issues and things and have a grand time doing it. It's what we do.
I guess you've heard of both of those, Mormon issues and Mormon things.
I'm a descriptive person. It's just who I am.
Mormon issues like temple marriages and Mormon things like garments and sacred robes at the temple. Both will be discussed on this week's show.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on this week.
That's pretty heavy agenda.
Yeah. There's heavy stuff this week. We're going to try to make it amusing. There's also brothers who randomly meet in Atlanta. And no, they're not zombies.
We won't talk about
that. You Walking Dead fans. They're not zombies. No.
Hey-o.
So,
hey-o.
Well, we got a good time this week. I'm excited for it. Thanks for being with us. You can visit us, of course, at thisweekinmormons.com, assuming you can actually get on the website. But
Take the crown.
Yeah.
Hashtag take the crown. That's how I greet everybody here. It's our version of Roll Tide in Kansas.
Now,
City.
I've heard Al, for anyone who doesn't know for whatever reason, Al is a Missouri native and a Kansas City Royals fan. And so,
avid Royals fan.
Are you really avid?
Well, I am this season. It's amazing.
Did you even know before that when Moustakas goes to bat, people go, Moose?
I did know that, but I'd never heard of Finnegan because he was at the World Series of the collegiate level last year.
Okay, well, there we go. So Al's a big fan, and so that's going on for him.
As we speak, take the crown.
Now, I heard that this is just baseball news. Now, I heard there's a station in Kansas City playing Lords Royals on repeat for the next 24 hours.
That would be amazing.
And I've also heard that San Francisco DJs have taken, the whole Bay Area DJs have taken an oath to ban that song from the airwaves during the series.
It's probably for the best, because we will crush them.
I mean, what other songs?
We will crush the Giants.
Yeah.
We are a sweeping team.
I'm hoping for it, except if you do sweep, though, you will win it all in San Francisco. You won't actually get to clinch at home, which would be kind of sad.
Could you imagine never losing a postseason game?
That'd be bold.
Has that ever happened?
No. I don't think it really has, and they're already setting records because nobody's done it the way they have in the era of the namely the main wild card era, but now with the double wild card. I mean, they have a lot.
Yeah, and the comeback from behind in like five games. This is amazing.
They're doing great work.
What a treat.
Are you managing to go to any games while you're there? That's got to be a hot ticket.
Yeah. I got leads on two World Series games. So both, what is it, Tuesday and Wednesday?
Uh-huh.
I will be rocking the, I'm going to try. I got one nosebleed on Wednesday. They're pricey. Those tickets are pricey, but you know, for us, it's a once-in-a-lifetime gig.
It's what you got to do, yeah. And Kauffman's not that bad. Nosebleed at Kauffman's still a pretty good seat.
Yeah, well, I mean, really. It's a good seat. It's not like an Angels ticket up in the boonies. I mean, there are tickets at Angels Stadium that you legitimately can't even see the field. It's just
it's so high. No, Dodger Stadium has a fourth tier. Did you know that? It's way up there. Can't see anything at Dodger Stadium. It's terrible.
The way that works is it goes down to the basement. After the third level, you just go to the
basement. For a little baseball trivia, friends, one of the cool features of Dodger Stadium is they built it into the hillside, and so they designed it so you actually park on the level where you sit. So if you're up on the fourth tier, the parking lot, you know, goes up levels, up and down. So you actually park up high and just walk right in, and you're on your level.
Ooh, neat.
No navigating of ramps or escalators. You just go.
I distinctly remember parking and walking upstairs / hills, though.
You might have. Who knows? But either way, I'm psyched for the Royals. Giants are fine, but I'm bored with them being in the World Series at this point. So,
yes.
I'm sorry, my native Californians, but considering the Angels, my Angels, beat the Giants in 2002 World Series, I will stand by that rivalry.
I'll stand by.
And even though the Royals eliminated the Angels deserved it. They played like garbage. I will back the Royals happily.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you very much.
I'm excited for him. I hope it happens. Otherwise, how is your life? What's going on with you?
Yeah, life is good. I'm back in Missouri right now. I fly to Texas this week. Getting ready for my right after Halloween flight to Dublin, which is going to be fun. I'm going to Ireland. I need to visit. I'm taking a drive up the coast. That's that's the bucket list item I'll be ticking off.
Are you going to the west coast of Ireland? Because that's the part you want to see.
Well, clearly I'll drive over to that, but it's only like 6 miles apart, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very tiny.
So yeah, I'll just drive over there and then drive that coast.
Okay, that's good. Is this a startup weekend type stuff that you're doing?
No, this is it's called Web Summit. So I'm going. It's a nerd fest, just a nerd orgy, if you will, of smart people getting together and talking about geeky things for a couple of days. And so I have a couple of days there, and then I'm hooking back up with our good friend Justin Maddle, where we'll be partying.
I did not know Maddle was meeting up with you.
Maddle found a cheap ticket to Norway, a $500 round trip ticket.
So you're actually going to Norway now?
No. So he's in Norway, and he texted me last night and said, "Hey, what if I just bum around hostels in Europe for a while and then meet up with you when you come?" And I said, "Perfect. I'll be there these days." So he's matching up tickets, and we're gonna
now, yeah, what
gallivant through Prague and Berlin.
I was gonna ask you, so you decided on Prague as your other stop?
Yep, that's my.
Will be delightful. I'm envious of you. I wish I could join you.
So I fly out in November, which means we'll be recording once from Dublin,
yep,
and then once from Berlin.
Well, I tell you what, I'm just glad that I will at least be back in D.C. The Dublin show is going to be interesting, because in the Dublin show, I will be in Colorado and you will be in Dublin. So there will be a bit of a time gap, but we'll make it work.
And I love when I travel. I don't make any effort to understand the time zone thing. I just say, "Jeff, try your hardest to be online when I'm online and we'll make it go." I refuse to Google what time it is there. Are you awake? Good. Let's do it.
I can tell you off the top of my head. It's Dublin is 5-7 hours from the mountain time zone.
You are like a little wizard,
so,
like a tiny wizard.
So as long as you and Maddle aren't out doing a pub crawl or something, we'll make it work.
I make no promises, Jeff.
Okay.
If they have ginger ale of the Guinness variety,
of course
I'm going.
Of course, of course. Well, that's fun. I never went to Ireland, and all the time when I lived in Scotland for school, I never just popped over to Ireland. I wanted to, I just never did.
What are you up to this week?
Well, this week I'm flying to St. Louis on Wednesday, and then on
we are men of the air. We are men about
and then
the
Saturday
world.
I'm flying to Chicago.
Oh, wow.
And then the week
What's
after that,
Chicago?
I'm taking a train to Milwaukee. And then I'm flying to Denver. And then I'm going to Colorado Springs.
Is this your road trip of America?
This is all
year?
Because of my wife and her job. And I just tag along and work, because I can just take, as long as I have Wi-Fi, I can live anywhere and do anything.
You and I, Jeff, we've chosen the right profession, you see.
I
we get to tag along with our beautiful wives.
I'm not meant to be chained to a desk. I am meant to just be given the freedom to work on a laptop and get my job done.
That's right.
That's how I was
that's
built.
Right. That's all we want to do. Let our significant others bring home the bacon.
Speaking of, if anyone wants to buy me like a Surface Pro 3, I'm cool with that.
Before we finish this, why would you ever want a Surface Pro 3?
I like them okay. I don't know if I myself would spend enough money to get one, but...
Why would you ever want the device that's almost as good as the device they're trying to mimic?
Okay, then just like get me a 13-inch MacBook Pro. I'm fine with that too.
That's cheaper. I would do that.
Okay, you should find it in the twin budget and get me one so I can work.
Speaking of the twin budget, Jeff, that may be a real thing, because today... You broke the internet. You did a great thing.
If page views resulted in money directly.
Which they can using Google
which,
Ads.
Which it can when you try for that. But we are a beautiful nonprofit in every sense of the word. And so.
Not by choice, just by
We literally
result.
Do not have profits.
We're a nonprofit by accident.
I think our greatest revenue stream came when we did a pledge drive when you broke your arm. That's really...
Yeah, that was almost $100.
It was
huge. Thank you, Barbara.
It was huge, and that was our first year. We did great work then. That was a long time ago.
Thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, I broke the internet. I don't know. Do we want to lead off with that, or do we want to get into that later? I mean...
Well, not yet. I mean, let's talk about it.
So,
that was great.
I'm going to lead off making sure people understand this. There is a great element of conjecture here, okay? This is a matter of sources... who knew people at meetings, et cetera, okay? So it's not like we're saying that anything we talk about here is what the church is going to do. It seems likely that it would happen. Honestly, it seems likely that it will happen inevitably either way. So remember that when discussing these things. This Week in Mormons is not just decreeing this is what's happening and the church said so. I just want to be straight about that. That's important to know. But it appears... Allegedly, that in some training
allegedly,
in some training meetings over the weekend in different temples, Workers were just informed that a change to the marriage policy would be taking effect. And we've talked about this before on the show, how it would probably be...
Yeah, we've speculated.
We've talked about how it's inevitable. Sorry, what now?
We've alleged and speculated.
And it's likely inevitable, mostly because... Well, we've heard before from some sources that the church was initially thinking about changing it specifically for converts or part member families, whatever, and allowing a civil ceremony and then going to the temple as immediately as is reasonable
to have
a ceiling, okay? But then you could still do a regular straight out temple wedding, including your civil ceremony. We've heard that before, and it makes sense. They might have just been trying to kind of regulate and make things a bit nicer for those who have family members who cannot attend the wedding. But now we're hearing instead it might be more drastic than that, and it doesn't surprise me, given the current political climate, that the policy would be changed to require all marriages to take place civilly before going to the temple. So temple marriages in the U.S. anyway would not involve the civil element. You would actually show up with your marriage certificate. You wouldn't show up with a marriage license to have signed by the two witnesses at your temple at your ceiling. You'd still have witnesses at your ceiling in a priesthood sense, which is important. But in a legal sense, as far as what's on the paper and as far as the state cares about registering your wedding, not as much. And this has been a thing that's probably been inevitable, as we've seen the argument.
Wait, why do you say that? Why is it inevitable?
Well, I think at
why
some
couldn't
point,
we not
at some point
it
would
itable.
Be. And bear in mind, there are a lot of factors at play here. But
is this strictly about gay marriage?
About gay marriage, but I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. And of course, this is where we're really seeing these concepts of like civil liberties, which many would, you know, could include gay marriage if you're talking strictly civilly. But then religious freedom, and you're really starting to see where they run up against each other. Because you can say, it is my religious freedom to not marry gay people. And then gay people can say, yeah, but it's my civil right to be married. And so where do we find that balance there?
Did you see that article going around Facebook about the girl up in Oregon who they like rented out their farm for weddings, and a gay couple tried to rent it and they were refused? And then they sued the couple. Did you see that?
I did not see that, but that does not surprise me. Many things like that have happened, yeah.
What surprised me most about that was how quickly LDS people jumped to it and said, yeah, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. When I was looking at that, I said, no, this is wrong. You should not be allowed to discriminate on that basis. Like something like renting out your place and saying, no, you're gay, you can't have it.
Yeah.
That's totally wrong.
Well, and here's the big kicker with that, though, and that's really important. There's a distinction between something that is a nonprofit, actual religious entity striving to have its right to have marriage be what it wants it to be, and for-profit entities that are just functioning as a business. Because in that sense, there's no way you can legally discriminate as a business. You can't just deny service to people as a business. That makes a lot more sense. Because in this case, it was renting out a facility, right?
Right.
There's not a lot of justification for that.
You need to be able to ask yourself, would I be okay if they did the same thing to me because I'm Mormon? And there's some cases where you're like, yeah, actually, I'd be fine with somebody saying, no, that doesn't fit with it. You know, like, will you marry me? No, our religious differences like wouldn't really make that work. Oh, okay, that's fine. Can I rent this place out? You know, can I rent out your farmhouse to be married? No, because you're Mormon, that would feel very awful. If I was going into a Catholic church and they said no because you're Mormon, I would be like, all right, well, it was a long shot. I like the chandelier. You know, like, check with yourself by asking, would I be okay if they discriminated against me using my religious preference or affiliation? And if that checks out, then it's probably okay to be like, well, no, this is my thing. But if not, I mean, because that would make me feel awful if somebody said, no, you can't do this because you're Mormon. Yeah, I'm not going to rent this to you. I'm not going to make you a cake in my bakery because of your religious affiliation. Not okay, people. Do not support. Don't share that around as though Glenn Beck was onto something. That is not okay.
Yeah, and there's that fine line there. And we see a similar thing that's going around this week. Even Donald and Evelyn Knapp of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, who are ordained ministers, but the point is they actually run a wedding chapel, and that's where this is different. So this is the fact that they run a for-profit wedding chapel. And they
like a Vegas type chapel.
I guess, yeah. But I don't know if you could do that. That's a thing up in Coeur d'Alene. Who knew? But so they are ordained ministers, and so they can legally.
Is that like the Ivory Coast of Idaho?
Is the Ivory Coast of Idaho? Yes, people speak French, and it has the largest Catholic building
in the
world.
Coeur d'Alene.
So the point is, they are ordained ministers, but when they are marrying people, I don't believe they're doing so under a sense of like representing a church entity. They are representing their business and their legal authority to civilly bind people. And so sure. And so that's when it gets a little bit different for them saying that they don't want to because they oppose gay marriage and they have that view. But if from running a business like that, it's definitely very, very different from if they were to switch their thing to a nonprofit church.
I would say absolutely not okay. Yeah,
if they switch it to a nonprofit church, then the discussion gets more interesting and you deal with many of the things that we see in our own church because we are a nonprofit entity. We do not have paid clergy. And this is an instance where the whole no paid clergy thing actually gets even more interesting because we don't have people like on salary in that sense. And that does change the discussion even quite a bit more. That it's all volunteering, so this-
So the idea that they would not allow marriages in temples anymore is sort of a preemptive move, so it doesn't look like we're being reactionary.
I would say so.
When the time comes, because we expect the time to come when they will say, if you perform marriages, you are not allowed to discriminate on the basis of sexual preference, right? But isn't that a realistic expectation, I would think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you would think so. Because if it's still getting a civil wedding, I've seen many arguments about this on all shapes and sizes, especially with the post we put up today about it. But
broke the internet, hundreds of thousands of
but,
views.
But yeah, because it's
good work, Jeff.
Thank you kindly. Because that's the key element. It's one thing that our marriages are solemnized with sacred covenants, but that's all a religious element. The state doesn't care about our sacred covenants. They just don't. It's just a luxury that we have in the United States and in Canada and in South Africa that we can go and do our sealing, and when that is done, the sealer also has a civil authority to marry us as in the eyes of the state. And it's nice. I mean, like, I got married that way, and yeah, it's nice. I mean, I like it. It's great. If it had been different.
Wait, you got married civilly, and then...
No, I'm saying I got married in the temple.
Romantically?
I got married in the temple, and it was all done in one fell swoop, and it was great.
Oh,
and it's easier, and it's cleaner, and it's nice. And I think because of the plurality of members of the church who live in the United States or in Canada, we're accustomed to that being the norm, even though it hasn't always been the norm. And so the thought of it changing... is met with a lot of apprehension, understandably so. But it troubles me.
What is the apprehension? Why are we apprehensive?
Feel like it's us bowing to the whims of society. But I just feel like it's been a perk that we can get married in the temple, like, and have that recognized civilly. It's a great thing that we have, and I wish it would always stay that way. But if you go anywhere else in the, I mean, my eyes were first opened up to this on my mission. Yours was probably similar, Al.
Yeah.
Where I didn't ever think about that in my life until I went on a mission to Spain and people got married, and I was like, so you just go to the temple, and they're like, no, we go to the courthouse, and then we have like 3 days to get to Madrid and get sealed. And that's the window. And there's always a window. And if you don't make it in that window, then the year-long period that's normal stateside, if you were just to get married civilly, takes effect. And so we could see ourselves in a similar situation, like you said, Al, because of gay marriage issues, because the church says it's nice that you want to legally wed people, but we don't believe in that. And so the government could say, well, that's fine that you don't believe in that, but that means we cannot like honor your ability to wed people if you refuse to marry gay people under the law.
So here's one of the things that I like about it, is it takes the focus from the temple marriage, which is not the thing that is the focus, to the temple sealing, which is the thing of focus, right? Often when you have a couple getting married in the temple, the whole focus is on that event that we're married. Now we're together.
Yeah.
And I kind of like the idea of separating that out and saying, no, all right, we're married. We're here. But then we go to the temple and we're sealed. And that's a distinct different thing. That is a different ordinance than the idea that we are saying I do, kissing over the altar and exchanging rings, right? I kind of like separating those out. I feel like that might be a little bit more understandable to people that are going in and getting married and haven't really had the time to differentiate those as well.
I can also, but the funny thing is I could also see the reverse, or I could see the dark side of this, where Mormons start having more elaborate weddings, which we're not known for.
I was thinking about this as well, man. Utah has this great sort of buy where chapels are the primary use of wedding receptions, because it doesn't matter. When all of a sudden it's a wedding ceremony and that needs to be beautiful and lovely, like, that's a huge industry boom all of a sudden in the Salt Lake Valley in Utah County, where all this stuff happens all the time.
But I bet we start to see huge deals, it's interesting, because I think one of the beautiful things of a wedding, even if it's just straight, is like you say, the ceiling is so important. And so the marriage, the civil marriage, is great. But when I was getting married, I wasn't thinking like, oh, I'm so excited to be legally and lawfully wedded to my wife. That was a side effect. But, you know, a result of that. But I was excited to be sealed to my wife, and that was great. A very good friend of mine,
they had the reception the night before.
I've seen that, yeah.
And then, which I thought was really, really smart. So they go and they play with family and do their whole thing. The next morning, the entire day is just about wedding, like they're married, sealed, and them. Right, which I thought was really clever. I kind of like the idea of separating those out, which is exactly what this would do, sort of full on.
In theory, I just do worry about it, Mormon weddings becoming too big of a deal. And also, the other issue here, it's minor, but for people who do just want to go to a courthouse, like, because you could do it the day of. Like, you could schedule a simple thing with a judge, get married, then go to the temple and do the real deal that matters to you. Like, you know, I don't even know how I would do it today if that were the case. Like, I wonder if I would honestly have just gone to the courthouse, gotten married civilly, and then just met up with everybody at the temple with my wife. Like, I don't know if I would have even invited people, except for the fact that the court charges $18 for a witness if you don't have one. So, got to have that.
I would have told one person.
But that's where it does become a bit more of an issue, is that you have to pay for a marriage license, but if you need to get married by a judge or whatever as well, that's the cheapest option, but that usually comes with another, you know, $80 to $100 of a fee. So there's an extra fee. And getting married, of course, in the temple is free. Having your bishop marry you civilly is free. And it's a minor thing, but it does incur extra cost. And there is a risk, if all this goes this way, that and to also kind of cover its bases, the church would potentially restrict whether bishops could marry people or not. I've wondered about that one.
Just so that they're not putting that conundrum.
I've wondered that one. But I think even moreover, you would see that weddings, receptions would be fine, but weddings themselves would also potentially not happen at any church buildings as well, so as not to blur the lines.
I do wonder, so like the, well, before we leave it, first, can we talk about the tendency within Utah Mormon culture to one-up the other, and that sort of keeping up with the Jones mentality?
Sure, yeah.
And what these weddings are going to look like? This is going to be an absurd boon for the wedding industry. People go buy tablecloths and be prepared to rent them. You will make a killing. I am so excited for the elaborate on elaborate on elaborate. When that weird guy that runs Vivint, all of a sudden his daughter goes to get married, and they like are renting out 19 hot air balloons to lift the entire field of people. It's gonna get crazy. Yeah, like that's just the Utah way. Over the top, and then on top of that. Now, the other piece that I think is interesting to think about is that idea of bishops marrying like a gay couple. Is there anything? I mean, is that diabolically, not diabolically, but like morally wrong for us to perform that union, or can we do that with sort of a we wish you the best? Good luck.
Well, some of our bishop listeners who've emailed us in the past can correct this if they want, but didn't remember when gay marriage?
They were instructed not
when
to.
When gay marriage was legalized in Utah, they sent a letter to bishops and said, doesn't matter if it's illegal in your state, don't marry gay couples.
Right.
So.
Yep. But like down the road, right? So let's say the law was passed that said you have to. Do you think the church would take away the sort of the ability or responsibility of bishops to marry?
Well,
just to avoid having to perform that for a gay couple.
And this is once again where the religious freedom ideals kind of run up against this, because this is key. This is where it's the fact that we are a volunteer organization that is a nonprofit. We are not running a business to wed people. So that's why it opens it up more to interpretation, whether we would be required, if it's off of our own premises especially, for a bishop to marry gay people. If they could say no, because we're saying we're a nonprofit, it clashes with our style of belief as a nonprofit, and that might be protected under some religious freedom
let's say it was ruled that that we had to. Is there, I think I already know the answer to this, but I mean, would we be able to say, okay, you know, I don't necessarily agree with this. I don't believe that it's something that will last, but let me perform your civil union, your civil marriage here, and no harm, no foul, right?
Yeah, potentially, but I could see
that wouldn't happen.
I could see it not being.
We don't think that would happen, do we?
I don't
think that would happen. I think the church would sooner say bishops no longer marry people.
Potentially. And then that's a sad day, because I do think it's one of those nice things that if at the current situation, if you're not getting married in the temple, it's great, I think, to have a bishop that you know and revere. In many ways, it's more personal, because when you go to the temple, you're just like assigned a sealer usually, unless you know somebody. You've got some random sealer comes in and does it all, and that's fine. But if you get married and your bishop can do it, you probably know the guy, and you've counseled with him, and it's...
So my brother's a great example. He hadn't been to church in 10 years when he got married, but he still affiliated himself with the Mormon religion. Mm-hmm. And when he went to get married, he called his local bishop and said, hey, I want you to come do the ceremony. And he was very gracious, came and got to know him, and prepared some words and performed it. He didn't know them from Adam. They weren't members of his congregation or anything of that nature, but he was an LDS... bishop that he felt close to. He felt a sort of affiliation with. And so I know that there's gay couples out there that are in similar situations. And so on the one hand, it would be great if that were open to them, right? If we could say, well, we obviously can't seal you. We have no intention of that. We feel that an eternal marriage is a marriage between a man and a woman. But what about, I don't know, just a marriage if it came to that. I wonder if there's something in our core beliefs that prohibit us from even going to that level.
Yeah.
Do you think there is, or do you think that would, like, which way do you?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that Salt Lake would give bishops. I don't know how much sort of carte blanche they have right now to just feel it out on their own if they want to do a wedding or not. Which obviously, if it's heterosexual, there's no reason to say no. It's like, well, whatever. These people just want to get married. It does. I don't know. I still can't see the church being okay with it, even if it is the law of the land. But so I'm really just not sure. I know there are religious exemptions that I know are supposed to be talked about as gay marriage is made legal in different states in the U.S.
Man, I just can't wait for Exhibit to pimp my wedding, going to Utah. He's like, yo, dog, I heard you like licorice. I just put licorice in your licorice. It's going to be I cannot wait for the ceremony on top of the temple. It's going to be phenomenal.
But the one thing we're not talking about as much, though, is how much this could be, I think, a positive thing for these non-member or part-member family situations. And I think there are many families who can be understanding and can say, hey, this temple thing's important to you. It does sadden me that I'm not there, but I understand this is something that's like really important to you. And I'm glad that you're following through on something of, of value, and that's fine. But I also have plenty of stories where parents or other siblings are hurt that they're not able to see the wedding. You know, it doesn't mean anything to them to see a ceiling. That's not as much their deal. But just to see their loved one get married, you see people and they could say, like, hey, this is my sweet child. And how many fathers dream of the day when they can walk their daughter down the aisle? And
on the one hand, but what about on the other hand, where if you are, let's say your dad is less active and he has been for years and all of a sudden this wedding's coming up. I mean, what better kick in the pants than I don't get to see my kid get married if I don't get my act together?
It's true. So see, there are incentives there, and that you can see all sides of these arguments. You could say that by leaving it what it is, ideally it compels people to want to be better and strive to be able to be in the temple rather than just saying like, well, it's nice that you got married. I was glad I was able to go to your wedding. Enjoy your ceiling thing. That's cool. I'm glad for you. Whatever. But
I do know taking the stigma, the one thing this will do is take the stigma off of the we got married civilly and exchanged rings over here for my family and everybody else. Because before it was sort of a thing where it's like, oh, I thought you wanted a temple marriage. And you're like, I did.
Here's one of the.
And I got sealed. I'm so sorry.
One of the other potential, I think, upsides would be this would basically do away with ring ceremonies, which ring ceremonies are fine. But the,
no, they're
goofy. But they're such a like an uncomfortable afterthought to try to bring some sort of civil normalcy to the proceedings. I've been to good ones. I've been to atrocious ones. But
give me your best atrocious one.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sure I can talk publicly about this. I was at a wedding last year. I was DJing the wedding, actually.
Yes, and, yes.
The guy who did the rings, and the key thing to remember with ring ceremonies is it is not a priesthood ordinance. It's nothing. A monkey could do a ring ceremony. You could grab a kid from primary and say, will you do this ring ceremony?
And I have.
Anyone can do it. Men, women, children, animals, doesn't matter. Anybody.
I'm sensing a power vested in me by the state. Sort of
No. It was way more awkward where the bride had like, it was someone's bishop at BYU, Idaho, and the bride had known them and lived with them for a while. And he was like, yeah, she used to hop into bed with us. He's like, nothing kinky. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
But, no.
Oh no, that was just the start of it. Then he referenced portions of, you know, the film Unbreakable with Bruce Willis?
Yeah. Okay. Breaking Bad. I love that one.
At the very beginning, there's a part when Bruce Willis is riding a train and he kind of takes his wedding ring off to flirt with a lady next to him. It doesn't go anywhere.
Sure.
And he references that and is like, don't go taking your ring off, you know, like when you're going out on the town and stuff. And we're just like, what is this guy talking about? And there were a couple other really good moments that were just cringe.
Like, hey, remember when you walk across all that broken glass in your bare feet?
when you're fighting.
Awesome.
Remember that time you were fighting German terrorists?
That was awesome.
And I'm trying to remember the other. There was at least one or two more really bad examples. It was enough that I almost kind of got up and went over to my rig and wanted to just kind of like cue him up.
Well, because here's the thing, man. When you ask a bishop, a Mormon bishop, to come do your wedding, do anything with your wedding, he's not good at this. He hasn't practiced. They don't write things like a lot of religious clergy. I mean, they get paid big money. These are big things that they're going on. The tip is what carries them. And so, like, you ask your Mormon bishop to do it, and he's the goofy guy that's just been called 2 weeks earlier. It's like, well, a front rub in the back room. I mean, wait, what? How does that go? Oh boy! And you're just like, no.
Yeah, and this was that sort of stuff. And the thing is, it was open mic night for this guy. He thought.
I remember when you were confessing your sins to me the other night. We're not doing that again, are we?
Don't worry, that's on the table now. You're golden. It was super bad. I'm glad, all of us were just sitting there in disbelief that this could be.
But what was the couple doing?
Smiling politely as it went on, but we know that after the fact.
Did they realize that it was trashy?
Well, yeah, after the fact, they knew what happened. I think even when they walked away after sort of exchanging rings and walking back down the aisle, you could see the confusion and displeasure. Now it's at least something to laugh at, so that's good. But in the moment, very uncomfortable. If any of you ever do ring ceremonies, don't.
Was this Joe's wedding?
No, I didn't get to go to Joe's wedding.
Oh.
If any of you ever do ring ceremonies, don't be dumb. Just be straight and to the point and say some sweet words and how it's just nice and get it over.
Write your vows in the form of a lighthearted rap or something.
I would prefer a haiku. Would be very nice.
Yeah, the haiku would be great.
So we've talked about this. There are a lot of other wild things have been going on, people. Should we talk about this temple video?
Yeah, no, the temple garment video.
Yeah. I wish I would have
read. What was that all about?
This, what was it, Saturday night, I think, when this dropped?
First off, I love it. I'm very excited about it. Secondly, out of the blue, cannot believe they did it.
Way out of the blue. And the other thing I can't believe, and this is, I say this with love to our Facebook fans, many people thought this was not from the church, that this was some
hit
job by somebody
else. Some serious anti stuff.
Even though this was from MormonNewsroom.org, and on the header it says the official resource for news, media, opinion leaders, and the public, and in the footer it says the official website of unofficial website of the church. Many people were. It's understandable though, because when you see something this open about temple garments, I think they were naturally apprehensive. So the first thing you think is like, all right, who's doing it now? Who's doing it now? But no, this was...
Yeah, we get defensive right away.
This
it's
was
true.
Produced by the church, which was just shocking. Walk us through this, Al. So they
jump in and the video just sort of goes through some of the, you know, the temple is a sacred place, and many religions have sacred things related to them. The Jewish prayer shawl, the Muslim skull cap, the burqa, the I don't know, whatever else they mentioned. So they have, like, every religion's got their clothing, their thing, that is them. And so they're just like, we're not weird with this. We're not out of the ordinary for having a sacred garment that we wear, that we feel, you know, connects us spiritually and reminds us. Because that is the purpose of the garment. When they went out of their way to say it's not magical, there's nothing magical about wearing this. The garment doesn't...
I like that they stressed that a few times, too, that it's not magic underwear. Yeah. That was interesting.
You perhaps have heard it called magic underwear. It is not magic underwear. The purpose is as reminders. There are symbols on the garment that remind us of covenants we've made with the Lord. And I mean, very, very similar to a prayer shawl. Mm-hmm. Or you know, a lot of the Jewish garb that they wear, very, very similar to that. And so they show the garments. Now the garments, I didn't notice any symbols in them.
No, I think they were just blank.
A blank. And then they also showed the temple robes to is sort of a in the temple we go and we wear these robes, and it's just a quick pan of.
That shocked me though. It was
the apron, the robes, and the hat. Why did that shock you?
It didn't shock me like I was offended, but I mean, at first, because I knew they were going to show the garments just because the frame grab before the hit the play on the video showed them. I was like, oh wow. So then when it actually showed the temple robes, I just said, whoa, 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 because I always viewed those as even beyond what we don't really discuss.
Really?
We just don't discuss them very openly. It's not that we have anything to hide. Like you say, because if you read the Old Testament and see what the men in the tabernacle wore when engaging in the rituals and the ordinances of,
but it's interesting if you think through the conversations that you've had going into the temple, there's nothing that talks about not talking about the robes. It's all only about the garment.
Yeah, good point too, right? Good point on that one too.
There's nothing particularly sacred about the robes, and so
there's sacred stuff about. Let's be careful here.
No, there's
no. The robes are sacred. We even talk about. They even stress that in the video. You know, they are.
Well, they're sacred, but it's not like there's nothing in them that, you know, if you were not a member of the church and said, "Hey, can I see that apron?"
Yeah,
We're totally in the fine. We're totally in the clear to say, sure, take a look.
Maybe
at this.
I think it depends. I think it would depend on your audience. I mean, I think you can say take a look at this, but you don't just flash them around or anything. But
no, don't do not wear them.
No, because the key thing is, while they aren't the same as garments.
This is not a Halloween outfit, please. May I stress this?
Yeah, seriously.
Emphatically.
I actually saw that on one of the Mormon groups on Facebook. Somebody posted some, like, their Halloween costume idea. And credit to the group. This is a more liberal Facebook group of Mormons. And they flagged it and pulled it right away. And they were like, nope, don't care where you're at. We don't fly. That stuff doesn't fly here.
Yeah. Well, I mean... And I remember learning about the robes, though. My mom would be ironing, which, by the way, I've never ironed mine. I need to. That might be a thing.
I need to wash mine.
But my mom was ironing their temple bag stuff, and she was just like, "Yeah, this is what it is. Here, take a look." And like, it was okay to show me and let me sort of see what was going on. It wasn't demonstrated or anything, but like I was welcome to look at it. And she was very open about it, and I actually was very appreciative of that because, I just feel like there's so much. The temple is funny because we have this sort of secrecy around it, or this sacredness around it.
It's kind of self-imposed, really, the way we.
And a lot of it is self-imposed. There's a lot of it that we can talk about, but people just, you know, they feign this like secretness that doesn't necessarily need to be there. There are sacred things, and we know what the sacred things are in there. And then there's other things that help us understand those sacred things. And then there's everything else. Everything else you can talk about.
Yeah, just with the right tone, of course. Don't be flippant about temple work and what we do.
Sure.
But what I loved about this video, when I first went through the temple, I worked under the assumption my entire life that it was just people in their white clothes just like doing stuff. I didn't really know what. It's like, yeah, you're just like in the temple,
doing
you're worshiping,
what,
you have some meetings, you're like, there's lessons or something, right? And it wasn't until right before I was going to go through that I became aware of the robes that we wear and stuff. And as a, what was it? I was a 20-year-old kid then, that flipped me out. And some of this, of course, is due to my own ignorance. I had not like studied up on Old Testament rituals to really understand the crux of it. But another thing is our temple prep lessons do us a disservice because they don't really talk about these things. And I think that alone, I think, is a reason why a lot of people are taken back when they first
when you find yourself wearing a goofy looking hat, you're like, wait a minute.
Well, sure. When they first go through the temple, they have, you're just like, whoa, what's going on? Even if someone warns you.
Well, you dress up. You dress up in like wearing the robes exactly as it talks about in Exodus.
Almost. You do, and it's exactly. Important and it's symbolic, but our lessons in temple prep, sadly, don't really talk about that. The temple lessons we have are pretty boilerplate, really. You know, there's not a lot of...
And in the Mormon world, we don't... I mean, almost everything that we do is very, very straightforward. It's, you know, you wear your suit to church, and that's all the dressed up we've ever gotten. And so this is something that's completely out of character for us, it feels
totally,
like.
Totally. So it does feel very open. But I've been pleased with the response online. I think some people,
I'm so excited.
Have been uncomfortable, but I've been really happy to see that. It seems a lot of people are receptive, saying like, "This is great that we're able to still preserve the sacred nature of the temple, but explain a little bit more about what we do there, and or just about what goes on there and what the purposes are that they serve." And I think the church, you know, for many times when I can criticize hokey church videos and things that are maybe a little hackneyed or forced, this was a well done video. It laid it out very simply at first, like every religion has its symbolic clothing, whatever that may be. And Mormons have that too. We just treat it in a different way. And some of it we only even wear in a certain place. And that is all biblically based as well, which is...
That's the amazing thing, especially about the temple in general. I mean, everything in there, it's not just pulled out of thin air. It's based on scripture. Yeah. And it's always weird to me to have somebody get up and read out of Moses during a sacrament meeting or something, because you're like, hold on. Where was the... I only hear this in one other place.
There have been times where I've even referenced some of the Moses passages here on the show, and you've like come at me and said like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's right there. Just read Moses 5. What do you want for this? I mean...
It's all in there. But that's everything is it's there. And so... I mean, really important to sort of understand that the deep Old Testament ties, and that there's an element to it that we're fine discussing you're absolutely right, with the right tone, right audience, with somebody that is sort of genuinely seeking to understand. I mean, please.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a hostile situation where someone's is really going after you to try to find stuff out, you don't need to talk about it then. Because
if Obama's bringing it up in his against Mitt Romney or something, no, not okay.
Which we will not face again. But
them to the Mormon Newsroom video. Is Mitt Romney running again this year, Jeff?
Who knows? We're still early in the cycle.
In 2016, he keeps saying he's not, but they're giving him the nomination.
Well, he's the only one they've got. That's really all.
Who could run against him?
Anyway, this has been a big like 3 days in interesting news in the church. Another one I want to get. Actually, I'm going to do a quick little quick little in-betweeners. Someone was shot near a church. That stinks. So in South Salt Lake, a
3,300 South people.
3,300 South, 300 East.
The victim,
a 42-year-old South Salt Lake resident, was shot outside an LDS church. I don't imagine.
Just in the leg. She was shot in the leg.
Yeah, I don't believe there's any relationship to the church. She was just walking by the church when it happened. But that is unfortunate.
Okay.
So that is unfortunate. So our heart goes out to her and hope that her leg will heal and she will be fine.
I believe in that.
Another, let's see, quick one. There's so much. There in Seattle, this is a little bit briefer and it kind of goes back to some of our...
Is that a Christopher Walken accent?
Well you say when I...
In Seattle!
I have to really encapsulate... I have to kind of get in the mood to do Christopher Walken. I can do a decent one. Well, you see... No, that's terrible. Where you going, Frank? Where you going? My son, the pilot.
Is that from Catch Me If You Can? That's your Christopher Walken channel.
My wonderful son, the pilot. This happened over the weekend. Very interesting. So in Seattle, they decided, some bishops out there, or a bishop, decided to have special meetings to really try to court the LGBT brothers and sisters, many of whom have obviously shied, you know, kind of drifted away from the church, and especially since 2008, with everything that's gone down. And I think this is amazing. They really... planned like a full-blown outreach effort to say to them, look, we know there are issues going on and things to sort out, but we love you and we don't want you to feel like you can't be here at church and partake of the blessings of discipleship with us. And so they went way out of their way. And of course, I think they've got, over 90 people showed up from three stakes. It looks like, And it was a big success. I just think this is great. I love proactive outreach like this when people take the time to do it. When we don't shy away and try to pretend a problem or a wounded demographic, you know, we try to pretend it's not there and we'll just kind of deal with stuff and it'll sort it out on its own. I love seeing leaders just say, you know, we have issues. We have people that are hurting and that are still our brothers and sisters, and we should take the time to rescue them and, you know, get them back in the boat, like Elder Ballard said, in one way or another. So it's like,
I am the captain now.
Yeah, that's that kind of outreach is impressive to me, and it's inspiring, and it's not saying, hey, we support gay marriage or whatever else. It's not like embracing everything that people believe the church stands against or just at least doesn't stand for, but it's saying we have brothers and sisters in Christ, and they're...
Which is sort of where we've needed to be this whole time.
Yeah, right? It's just where they're hurting. It's so...
What's crazy about this is think back to like 5 years ago. This would have been just... absolutely absurd to think that a member of the church could even do that. Yeah. It's funny how far we've come, because I mean, like is nuanced by the fact that some of those goofy articles that get shared around where everybody piles on is like, yeah, their rights were being infringed. This is wrong. And it's like, hold on, man. Like you can't tell somebody no based on this thing that identifies them, like, that's not okay. You can't do that. And we're getting more and more, we're learning as a people, I feel like, that you know, how to be Christian first and Mormon second, which is very, very important, I feel like, because the Mormon theology, I mean, the doctrine is, the gospel is perfect. The doctrine continues to distill as it supports the gospel, mm-hmm. right? Like the doctrine of the church is there as a means of applying the gospel to our lives.
Yeah.
And which is why we have doctrines that, you know, are true and good. And then we have doctrines that are sort of evolving and becoming, what they are in the
end. Or at least policies. And I even see that with our leaders, and not in a bad way. I don't see this as capitulation against, you know,
right.
the tides and the signs of the times, but we see that we have beliefs, and we see that even prophets and leaders in the church can change in the way they approach an issue and the way we deal with stuff, and that's nothing unique. I mean,
and
was Peter perfect out the gate? No, Peter had tons of stuff to learn. Even if he saw,
that's a great alliteration, by the way.
Thank you. Even if he saw the perfect example of Christ right in front of him. I didn't mean Peter just knew what to do and did it right out the gate. I mean, he even went as far as denying the Lord three times. And so who's to say that we don't learn things? It's not that anybody's wrong or anybody's right for that matter. It's just the fact that we're learning as we go, not just church leaders, but everybody, the whole church as a whole. I think that's a great point.
Well, and as we go, I think a great response to some of this would be, listen, I don't know how it's all going to settle up. I don't exactly understand how it fits, but I know that I love you as a person. And I want you to feel loved as a person. So anything I can do to make that happen, that's what I'm going to try.
Yeah. And it's all you can do. I mean, and it's always hard. And of course it's hard. Passions are evoked with this kind of stuff. With gay people who believe they have a right to get married, of course that's going to be an issue. Because no matter what, you might have some disagreements on policy, on things like that. But I love that Elder Oaks spoke about, you know, loving people and loving people we even disagree with. And it's an important principle that's easy to forget when we're trying to sort of fight the righteous battle.
Well, because there's two principles there. One is not to quit disagreeing necessarily, mm-hmm, right?
Sure.
Not to just give up because somebody else has a different opinion. And two, that the focus is on loving.
Yeah.
You know, if you continue to love them, like, we can work through stuff. We can figure it out. And I feel like honestly, if the gay community felt just an overwhelming outpouring of love from the LDS community, despite our inability to agree on doctrines or policies per se, I think it might have been a completely different history between the two groups.
Yeah, potentially. And of course, it's always going to look a little bit awkward and say, hey, we love you. We want to work with you. Everything's great. But it could be perceived as, but we still want to deny you this thing that you seek. I mean, there's that to work through, and that's going to be there. But, you know, I mean,
let's see. I mean,
bottom line is love and understanding is what makes the difference here. It's too easy to become zero sum, have a zero sum mentality in these situations.
Absolutely.
That's not going to help anything on either end.
So two Mormons died in Africa from Ebola out of the 500 that have died.
Oh, so they're more important is what you're saying.
Well, we just highlight them.
Okay.
They're nice. There's also a petition going around to name a BYU building after a woman. Now, there's already two buildings named after women, but they are not important buildings. They're like residencies.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Do we have more important buildings? They want the life sciences building to be named after.
I would argue the most important building at BYU is the Tanner building. For BYU's own pedigree, the Tanner building is the most important building on campus.
Why?
It's the business building. BYU's proudest achievement is its MBA program. So come on.
The Marriott building?
No, it's the Tanner building. The Marriott building is the Marriott Center, which is very nice as well.
Oh yeah, that's nice too.
Or maybe just the Wilk is the most important. Who knows? But I'll say the Tanner building just for posterity.
They have four people in mind that they would accept: Martha Hughes Cannon, Ellis Reynolds Ship, Romania B. Pratt, and Penrose and Jane Manning James.
None of these were women who were named by Nyland McBain when we had her on the show.
And we've never heard of any of them. I don't know.
Well, James
people.
Was a black Mormon pioneer.
Who was? Jesus?
No, Jane Manning James. You know Jane Manning James. She's sort of referenced in the old Joseph Smith movie.
Oh, no. JMJ. Yeah. I got you.
So President Worthen has received the petition. I believe this is supposed to be what the new life sciences building, I think.
What did he do with the petition? Did it say?
No,
did he look at
don't.
It?
We know he's received.
Did he consider it carefully?
Here's the one thing, though. I don't have a problem with this at all. But don't they kind of try to name the building? I guess they don't totally. I think when they can, they try to name the buildings after prominent LDS figures who have sort of a relationship to the focus of that building. Maybe not all.
Yeah, like the Gordon B. Hinckley building. He is really good at classrooms.
No, there are no classrooms in the Hinckley building. That's a reception hall and visitor center.
Oh, that's not true. Go downstairs, Jeff.
Oh, that one. Okay, fine.
The GBA?
I'm saying it's not always that way by any means. So
the Spencer W. Kimball Tower, because he was so tall.
And the politics, because that's where political science is. Love the That should be the Ezra Taft Benson building. What are they thinking?
Yeah. I mean, come on, people. No. Can we figure this out? So there's really no rhyme or
reason.
No,
the only one that makes...
I say give them all to women. Let's have a women week where all the building names are changed for a week.
Now that I'm thinking about it, the only ones that really make sense, I guess the...
What if during Black History Month, those were all named after prominent figures in Black American history?
Well, what are the ones, the buildings that make sense here? I guess the Eyring Science Center does kind of make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense because Henry B. Eyring's dad was really into science.
The law...
He did not go to BYU,
The J. Reuben Clark building is at least about law, so that one makes sense. And I guess the Wilkinson Center, just because it's a general building and it's named after a former president.
The Wilk, he loved food and maybe a free piano that weird guys would
exactly.
play.
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head once more.
He was
friend.
Very into Chick-fil-A.
Do they have a Chick-fil-A there now?
They sure do.
Do they really? Man, when I was there, it was like freshetta. That pizza's terrible.
The winds.
Have you had a freshetta pizza? Why would you waste your hard-earned money on that? It's not even a step above. It is just a frozen pizza you buy at the supermarket.
It literally is a self-rising crust.
And put it. It's not a DiGiorno. It's just a thing you put in your own microwave. It's a waste of your life. Don't do it, everybody.
All right, do demographics, Jeff, because you've seen this and I have.
Okay, and this got changed, unfortunately, so I don't have a good link to it anymore.
The church, the invisible hand.
Thank you, Adam Smith. He showed up. The LDS Tech Conference went down last week, and there were many different. I would love to go to this if I'm ever able, but I don't live in Utah. But one great speaker was Blaine Maxfield, who's the Chief Information Officer, the CIO of the church's IT department. Okay, so he gave sort of a keynote Thursday morning at the University of Utah, and what he did is he said, "Let's look at the church's 15 million members as if it were 100 people, and decide to break down some demographics." Already, my interest was piqued because demographics are wonderful. So 48 of those people would live in the U.S. or Canada, 36 in Latin America, 3 in Europe, 3 in Africa, 3 in Oceania, and 7 would live in Asia. Well, let's be honest, 6.5 of them are in the Philippines. So that's cool. And then he went on to say that 48 members of the church joined since the Family of Proclamation to the World was published. 79 out of the 100 joined after the revelation on the priesthood in 1978. So that's all very interesting. But in the original version of this article, it went on to say more stuff. Now I wish I would have just like printed the page as a PDF or something. But it said other things, such as 36 of the members attended sacrament meeting every Sunday. 5 of the members are illiterate. And there were other interesting nuggets of information like that. And that was this got going around because people were saying, did Deseret News just publish an article saying that 36% of the church is active, basically? And they did. And that's sort of in line with what we kind of assume. We usually assume the 40s for activity in church. But then it got more interesting because the article got pulled and we were only able to keep looking at it because of one of our good listeners cached it for us. So we had the cached one.
Well, also there's web.archive.org, which the internet uses.
Are you going to find that one then? Find that. Find it for us, Al. Take me there.
Well, I've got it, but it doesn't have the previous.
Because now the cache has also been re-updated. So it said all this. The church yanked the article. Well, sorry, no. Deseret News yanked the article. I misspoke. And then they brought it back later on in this edited form that omits anything involving, you know, the illiteracy or the activity levels. And there were some other good nuggets of information in there.
Now, so the 36% of people attend church every week, that's actually kind of encouraging because the, no church, like our church measures activity ratings by like a monthly attendance. So if you go once a month, you're technically active.
That is true.
And so, I mean, that's probably a lot better than maybe we thought, because I was under the impression that we had like a 15% activity rate.
No, better than that. But it should be noted at the bottom, the editor's note they put in says some of these statistics are as originally reported in this article have been removed because they have not been verified by the church. The information was removed at the request of the speaker. That might be true, but if the speaker didn't want it there, why would he have...
Mr. Speaker, please give us our numbers.
Why would he have published it or presented with those numbers if he did not want it to then
riddle me
be
this
quoted? About that. That's fine, and maybe that's the case, but I can't imagine.
You're a journalist. You have to tell us.
Yeah, I mean, why? Like, you don't give a presentation and offer data and then say, guys, sorry, don't publish this part of it because I'm not sure if it's verified by the church. Well, then, like, why are you putting it in your presentation if you can't verify anything? It just...
Yeah, screw you.
Okay. What's it going?
I'm on Jeff's side.
Anyway, point is, I could imagine instead someone else upstairs said, we don't like to put... Because the church doesn't ever comment on it, on the activity rates. They just don't.
They are not one to be riddled with.
You sent me a link to webarchive.org. This does...
Yeah, no. So now you don't have to wait for Google Cache. Oh,
thank you, kindly. So that's very interesting. I'm sad that the original one got yanked down for whatever reason that may be. I'll give it the benefit of the doubt.
There's a clear article, or an article clearly written for Linkbait that says, can Mormons be liberals?
Absolutely not.
Yes, they can.
No, they're sinners. Liberal Mormons.
That's as much of a mention as we'll
I wrote all about liberal Mormons a year ago. It was terrible.
Yeah. And then also, there are members in Lebanon that are helping Syrian refugees. Good work. Way to be nice.
That is very nice. I know that's good news. There's a branch in Beirut. There's not aren't a lot of members of the church in the Levant area, but it's part of the Jordan Amman district. And the little branch there in Beirut's helping out Syrian refugees, which is a situation that is sadly getting worse and worse as the days go by. It's unfortunate to see.
Is it still, man? I've lost track of it.
And lastly, in big announcement for the Motab Christmas concert, which I've always wanted to attend, but I don't live in Utah once more. The church is too Utah-centric. We need to spread out where we have all of our cool venues. Like, let's rebuild the conference center in Madison, Wisconsin. I think that's fair.
Yeah, you know? Let's make it central. Put it back in Zion where it belongs.
They should rebuild the conference center in Adamon Diamond. That'd be awesome.
Okay.
But Motab, its Christmas guests are going to be pretty interesting. So Broadway actor Santino Fontana, who sung with them previously, he's...
Oh, that's Elsa from
Not
Frozen.
Elsa, but it's Kristoff from Frozen.
Alphaba.
The guy they wasted because they gave him that one dumb song with his reindeer, and he was probably one of the best singers in the cast. I don't even understand the point of that one. But on top of him, the Sesame Street Muppets will be performing. And this I've got to see, because so much of Muppetry... Yes, I called it Muppetry, like puppetry. Muppetry is dependent on the way you frame and block a shot, because the dudes doing using the Muppets have to be hidden somewhere. There's ways to do it in a live setting where it's fine. It can be done. You know, they hide inside a chair or a table or whatever. But I'm very curious how this is going to be with Muppets performing with Motab. I think it's great. I can't wait to see what
the quote is. Elmo is like super, super, super honored. And that was said in a phone call. How far do we take this little game?
Yeah. I like that.
Isn't it true that the person doing Elmo is forbidden from ever coming forward?
Well, did you ever see that movie? What? Well, there was the movie, you know, Becoming Elmo, about that guy. And then the allegations came out about some improprieties, which is unfortunate.
That he was a bad Elmo?
Well, that he was bad with other people.
As Elmo?
No, not as Elmo. I don't think the doll was involved.
Elmo likes you. Ooh.
And on that note, I think I'm ready to wrap it up now. But
that's the ultimate lady getter, let's be honest.
Oh, and lastly, two brothers met in Atlanta. It was wonderful. You want to read the story? Maybe I'll link to it on the website, but I don't care to talk about it.
Anyway, Jeff, what a delight. You are just tremendous. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you. I'm going to go about rebutting Peggy Fletcher Stack, who wrote an article clearly to come after me.
She plagiarizes you all the time. Anyway, you can reach us, email us, contact at thisweekinmormons, or leave a comment at thisweekinmormons.com. We read everyone, and we love them.
Go to facebook.com and enjoy the over 4,000 other people who follow This Week in Mormons on Facebook, and be with us there. Commune with us. Share your thoughts with us on Facebook. Yep. Likewise on Twitter. We love tweeting. I think our Twitter community is pretty hilarious. So please join us on there at The Real Twim. Also follow us on Pinterest, which is at This Week in Mormons, or Twee Mormons on YouTube. We do not have same names, no matter what we do. But all these things are great, and we're happy you spend the time to be with us. And we hope you'll also listen to our Sunday School and our Gospel Doctrine and our Teachings of the Presidents of the Church podcasts, which are called Sunday School Bonanza and Third Hour of Power. All good things. It's wonderful.
Many hours.
It's wonderful. Just wonderful.
All right, man. I'll see you next week, Jeff.
Peace out, Al. Next week you'll just be in Houston or something. Cool. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Let us know how we're doing. Thanks for taking the time. We'll talk to you later. Another episode of This Week in Mormons is now behind us, in the past.
It's in the can.
It's in the past. Don't look back on it like Lot's wife.
I'm hanging up now.
Bye-bye.